In a shiur that I gave about a week ago, we discussed the mitzvah of Zekei Livyan Vehu Hidur Mitzvah. And we raised the following issue, which we analyzed at great length. Is Hidur Mitzvah built into every mitzvah? Every mitzvah engenders its own obligation of Hidur Mitzvah? Or is Hidur Mitzvah a kiyum klali, it's a general fulfillment of Zekei Livyan Vehu, it's not built into the mitzvah itself? One of the nafkaminas that we suggested was whether or not you could be mechallel Shabbos for Hidur Mitzvah. The Torah says, for example, with regard to Mila B'yom HaShabbos, B'yom HaShmini Afil B'yom HaShabbos, so we violate Shabbos for the sake of Mila, would we do so for the sake of Hidur Mitzvah? And it would really depend. If Hidur Mitzvah is an extension of the original mitzvah, of Mila in this case, we could violate the Shabbos for the sake of Hidur Mitzvah. If, on the other hand, Hidur Mitzvah is independent, it's a separate kiyum of Zekei Livyan Vehu, then we don't know that Zekei Livyan Vehu, with all its significance, could override the Shabbos. And what I want to introduce today, because I realized from our discussion about Hidur Mitzvah, which was about a week ago, that there's a very wealthy and a very exciting structure here that has to be analyzed, and I began to realize that it is almost universal. It's almost every single sugya in Shas. Obviously, I'm exaggerating, but there are so many sugyas in Shas where we should analyze the sugya from this perspective. Are we talking about a din klali, a general halacha, or are we talking about a din misuyam, a specific halacha? So we're dealing with universal or specific. And I believe that this is a very, very crucial tool for understanding and revealing the meaning of sugyas and shas. I once discussed, back in Canada in the day, the mitzvah of chinuch. And I quoted Rav Nachum Rabinovich Shlita, who's now the Rosh Yeshiva of Birkat Moshe, and he has strong roots and connections to Toronto. He proves that the Rambam, in at least three cases, has chinuch as a specific mitzvah. In other words, it's not enough to be mechanech a child in tefillin in the general sense for the sake of chinuch, but the mitzvah of tefillin engenders its own mitzvah of chinuch. And there are a couple of others, maybe Birkas HaMazon and others. But in general, the Rambam goes out of his way to say that chinuch is a general mitzvah. It's what we call a kiyum klali. It's universal. So that whatever mitzvah I'm teaching my son and educating him, it's always part and parcel of a general mitzvah called chinuch. What I'd like to analyze today, we'll try to talk about Chatzi Shir, which you may have in your Maror Makomos page, but I want to start with Zmanim. When I say Zmanim, what I mean, the Masechtos that we've been learning here over the last year, and those are Shabbos and Sukkah. And I began to look back at some of the insights that we had, and that we quoted from Arabeim, in Shabbos and in Sukkah, and I began to see how wealthy and how commonplace this Chakira is, this structure. Are we dealing with a universal halacha, a definition that applies elsewhere, or is it limited here and circumscribed to this specific area? So I'm going to start with Shabbos, and I'm going to refer mostly to Meleches Bishul. And what I have in front of me here on the table is a sefer that came out less than a year ago called Hare Kedem, in which Rav Michal Shurkin, Shlita, quotes Chidushin that he heard from his Rebbe, our Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik. And here on page Kuf Chaf, he discusses a concept called Bishul B'Kli Sheni. And the Gemara in Shabbos on Daf Lamed Tes establishes that you could be chayav for Bishul in a hot, if you put something which is called kalea bishul, certain little herrings and fish and so forth, you put them into a hot pot, which is off the fire, and moreover was never on the fire. It's a kli sheni. And you can be chayiv for bishul. And Rav Soloveitchik points out that this halacha of bishul b'kli sheni, to the extent to which you're chayiv on Shabbos in these cases of kaliya bishul, is a very unique halacha to meleches bishul on Shabbos. It's not a universal halacha in bishul. What do I mean? So the Rav says, for example, there's an iser of lo sevashel gedi b'chalev imo, a bishul basar b'chalev. It's one of the lavim d'oraisa in Karis Malkus. What happens if he would cook basar together with chalev in a kli sheni? The Rav says there's no doubt he would not be chayv. There's no such thing as bishul b'kli sheni. It's not bishul. Or, for example, in Karban Pesach, there's a separate iser to eat the Karban Pesach mevushal. Let's say it was cooked in a kli sheni. That would not be a violation of this lav d'oraisa of bishul with regard to Karban Pesach. Says the Rav, the reason in bishul yachayev is because bishul on Shabbos is different than bishul in Kol HaTarkula. There are strict restrictions and definitions that apply to bishul and Kol HaTarkula. What constitutes bishul? Kli sheni does not constitute bishul. On Shabbos, however, there's a din miyuchad, a separate halacha, and I'm reading the words here of the Hari Kedem. The mevlecha Shabbos mikavan davitikun. If there is a chidush here through this malach, it really makes an impact, a change. Chashuv, and it's a very significant change. Then yachayev for meleches bishul, and he proves this through many different sources, especially the Ran in Masechet Avodah Zarah, and the Ran claims that, for example, in Blias Isur, a bishul of this sort would not constitute blia on a Doraisa level. This is not bishul. Kli sheni ainu mevashel. Period. In Shabbos, we gauge the malacha by its impact, not by the maisa, not by the action. The action of bishul requires cooking something over the fire in a kli rishon. In the case of Shabbos, the maisa is only a stepping stone to achieve the tikkun. And the tikkun, the ultimate chidush, the impact, that is the essence of the malacha. In the case of kli sheni, with regard to Dagas Pinus and all those other cases of Kaliyat Bishul, this is the whole issue of tea, we have an accomplishment of Bishul. You can make something Mevushal, and paradoxically without a Maisa Bishul. So it doesn't constitute Bishul in Kol Tarkula, but there's a Din Miyuchad that Yechayev in Bishul on Shabbos. And if you turn the page here to Kuf Chaf Beis, the Rav goes a step further. And he speaks about bishul b'chama, solar energy. Now we know that you're not chayiv for bishul, neither in bas v'cholav, or in Karban Pesach, or in Bliyas Isurim, or even in Shabbos, for chamei tveria, or any sort of bishul b'chama. We'll leave out chamei tveria for now. Rashi says that the reason why you're potter for bishul b'chama on Shabbos, very odd. The ain derech bishul b'kach. That's not the normal way you do bishul. So the famous Sukkach of the Igle Tal, the author of the Avnei Nezer, who has a massive work on Shabbos called the Igle Tal, he asks, why did Rashi have to come on to ain derech bishul b'kach? And if it would be derech bishul b'kach, the Torah has a definition of bishul. Bishul is al gabi aish. It's not bishul b'chama. Why then does Rashi feel compelled to come up with a new justification for why you're not chayav on meleches bishul b'chama? So the Rav says the following: that ein hachinami in kol dini haTorah universally, solar bishul is not bishul. But in Shabbos, Rashi thinks that even though you don't have a maisa bishul, since the machal is misbashel through the chama, kishem shu misbashel be'esh, im ken yesh tikun b'kach, v'yesh l'chayvo b'melecha Shabbos. Again, melecha Shabbos, the ikar is not the maisa bishul, but the tikun, and there's a unique definition and standards for Melechas Bishul Shabbos that are not universal to Din Miyuchad. Rashi, therefore, had to stretch out his arm in order to explain and justify why you're not chayav for Melechas Bishul Chama on Shabbos. And the answer is saying there, Bishul Bekach, that it's like, what should I say, doing a Melecha Kelachar Yad, it's unusual, it's not the accepted normal way you do it. Had it been the normal way to do it in this case, you'd be chayav for Melechas Bishul, even though you'd be potter in Basar B'Cholav, and in Bishul B'Karban Pesach, and in B'lias Yisurim, and Kol HaTorah Kula. Fascinating how Bishul, as a Melech in Shabbos, has to be compared and contrasted with Bishul as a universal concept. And in order to illustrate this, the Rav quotes a Ran in Perek HaBonah. And this is called Chok Tochis, which means creating a Ksav through Grama. You didn't actually write the letters, but you did something that caused the letters to be written. And what's the case? The case is a Gag Shel Ches. A Ches is made up of two Zainim with a Gag on top. So what did he do? He removed the Gag that connects the two Zainim. And therefore he created two Zions. One Zion here, one Zion there. The Ran says he's Chayav. Notlo, Legago Shel Ches Vasol Shnei Zainim, Chayav. Based on a Sugi and Shabbos on Daf Kuf, Dalet. So the question is, there are Kama Vakama Sugis and Shas, for example, the Sugi of Ksivas Get, where if you write a get through Chol Tochis, which means you lower the ksav in such a way that the letters are formed, like you dig and engrave, that's not called ksiva. So why is it that in Shabbos you're chayav? Says the Rav, because legavi Shabbos leka kpeda ben Chol Tochis lechok yireches kol hecha dahavi meleches makshevis chayav. So the Ran invokes the principle of meleches makshevis. Says the Rav, Hainu, the ha'ikar, what defines the chiyuv for Melechas Kosev, is hatikun shel aksiva, meaning the ultimate goal. What are you left with at the end of the day? Lo ichpas lan ha'maisa ksiva, ve'ofen shel aksiva. But rather what we care about is the tikun, the final product. If at the end of the day, by erasing the gag of the ches, you're left with two zainin, you have written two zainin as far as Melech HaShabbos, because that's the tikkun, that's what you've created on Shabbos. I want to fast forward now to Kuf Lamed Hey, and here the Rav discusses the principle of Ein Bishul Achar Bishul in Shabbos. And based on the Rambam, we conclude, the Magen Mishnah understands from the Rambam, that if let's say you cooked a piece of meat and you brought it up to the state of Kimaichel Ben Josai, which is, it's half cooked, and that's enough to be Chai from Leches Bishul, then you or somebody else cooked it cold sarko, you took something that was half cooked and you cooked it to the end, you're potter for that. Why? Because Ein Bishul Achar Bishul. So the Rav says that in Basar B'Cholav Yesh Bishul Achar Bishul. In your classical paradigm of Bishul, in Kol Tarkul, you would be chayav for such a thing. But here in Shabbos is a separate din that you're part of. And not only that, the Rambam goes ahead and he says, in Perek Tes, Aloch HaGimel of Hilchos Shabbos, that if you take a raw food, which is normally eaten raw, and you cook it, you're not chayav from Melechas Bishul. So the Rav asks, where do we find such halacha in Kol HaTorah Kula? That a davar shenechal chai, something that could be eaten raw and doesn't need cooking, you're not chai from Melechas Bishul. Says the Rav, Poshut, to call din zehu dafka b'Shabbos, avol b'basa b'cholav, sheyesh isu de lo sevasha, gedi b'chalev imo, gam b'bishul achar bishul, v'gam b'davar shenu tzorach bishul klal. Mishum, in the case of Basar B'Cholav, we have to define what constitutes Bishul, and that doesn't depend upon the Tikkun, the final result. The fact that you did something which you could have lived without, you could have eaten this vegetable raw and you didn't need the Bishul, That's not relevant to the Maisa Bishul as defined in universal terms as it did Klali. And therefore, you definitely would be chayev even if you cook a davar she'eino tzarich bishul klal. So too in Shabbos, in the case of Bishul Achar Bishul, you didn't really create a tikkun, because once the first Bishul brought it to the state of Kemaychel Ben Josoy, it's edible. The tikkun, according to the Rambam Shita of Bishul, is to make something edible. It was non-edible, now it's edible. It was raw, and now you cook it, you can eat it. That's the tikkun of Bishul. If it was already cooked Kemaychel Ben Josoy, and now it's edible, although you and I might not want to eat it, but the Ben Josoy are out in the fields, they have to eat it, then you haven't created a tikkun of any significant nature when you cook it and bring it from Kemaychel Ben Josoy all the way up to Bishul Kol Tzarich. So too, in the case of something that's Nechal Chai, that could be eaten raw, you haven't made a major impact on this foodstuff to make it edible, because it was edible even before you cooked it. Fascinating. And now, I want to get back to Ksiva. The Rav has an amazing piece here on Meleches Ksiva. And without getting into all the nitty-gritty details, this is on page Reish Yud Dalet. The Gemara in Masechet Shabbos on Duf Kuf Gimel Amud Beis wants to know what happens if in a Sefer Torah the Sofer accidentally wrote the wrong mem. Right? We have two mems. We have a mem Stuma, what we call a mem Sofit, it's closed, and we have a mem Psucha, which is the regular mem that has an opening. And he switched it in one direction or the other. So Rav Chisda in the Gemara wants to prove that the Sefer Torah should be kosher, and he proves it from the Mishnah at the beginning of Ksiva, which is on Kuf Gimel Amud Aleph, and the Mishnah says that let's say you wanted to write the name Shimon on Shabbos, and you only wrote Shem, or you wanted to write Shmuel and you wrote Shem. The Mishnah says, Yechayev. Wait a minute. Frek the Gemara, Rav Chisda's question, what do you mean Yechayev? Shimon is written with a mem Psucha. He wrote it as Shem with a mem Stuma. So he didn't begin the process of writing Shimon if he wrote Shem. Why should it be Chayev for two letters of a word that he wanted to create if those two letters cannot form the beginning of that larger word? Says Rav Chisda, you see from this that both mems essentially are the same, and you can substitute one for the other, and therefore we can come to conclusions by analogy in the case of a Sefer Torah or in the case of Mezuzah if he wrote this mem instead of that mem. So the Rav says, I don't understand, I don't know what Rav Chisda is talking about. In the case of writing a Sefer Torah, there's a halacha called Uksavtem. The Gemara derives from the Tuf Mem, Ksiva Tama. Ksiva Tama means that with regard to a Sefer Torah, it's got to be written in a beautiful way. There's Shatnez Gatz, and there's Tagim. There are all sorts of different laws that are derived from Ksiva Tama to Sefer Torah. How could the Gemara use Shabbos and Meleches Ksiva as your source to teach you and derive conclusions for Stam, when in Stam there's Aloch of Ksiva Tama? And the Rav has a beautiful Chiddush based on the Rambam in the 7th Perek of Hilchas Sefer Torah. The Rav says that there are two Alochas in Ksiva of a Sefer Torah. There's one Alocha in what the Rav calls Guf Tsuras Haosios, and then there's another halacha to embellish the Sefer Torah with a Ksiva Tama. The nafkamina is that with regard to the first halacha, it's likuva, it disqualifies the Sefer Torah if it's lacking, if it's missing the Tsuras Haos. But with regard to the embellishments, like Tagim, for example, the Rambam himself says explicitly, even though Ksiva Tama requires the Sofer lechatchila to create these tagim, certain letters require one tag, other letters require seven tagim, whatever it might be. But the Eved, if he was deficient and he omitted the tagim, the Sefer Torah is still kosher. Says the Rav, you see that there are two halachas. One halach is basic, it's fundamental. Without it, the sefer is going to be possible. You switch the letter, it's not the Tzuras Ha'os. Says the Rav, that first halacha is a universal halacha. We can look to Hilchas Shabbos as our prism through which we can define what is the Guf Tzuras Ha'os. And if you're chayav for Shabbos, when you switch one mem for the other, mem psucha for a chesuma, for a psucha, or vice versa, it means that that mem is a mem. It has the basic Tzuras Ha'os, because there are two alternative ways of writing a mem, and both are the letter mem. But there are other halachas in Sefer Torah that would be unique halachas, what we call a din miyuchad, a din misuyam, that would only apply to Sefer Torah by virtue of the halacha of uksavtem, ksivatam. So here, Rabosa, we have a case, I just want to point out, in terms of derech halimud, where you have two parts or two dimensions of halacha. One dimension is a din klali, it's universal. The other is a din misuyam. So if you talk about ksiva, you could talk about tzuras ha'osios as a din klali, and here we have a right to be makish, to make analogies. Or you could talk about ksiva as a din misuyam, a special halacha of ksiva tama in Sefer Torah. And I told you that I wanted to talk also about Masechta Sukkah a little bit, and then maybe we'll get a chance to talk about Chatzis Shiur, which is in the Maamar Kovos, if you got them. In Masechta Sukkah, here's the question I want to address. With regard to three minim, we'll leave out the esrog now. We'll talk about the lulav, and we'll talk about the arav and the hadas. So there's a shiur defining the length, the minimum length that it has to be. And this is sugya in the third parak of Sukkah on Daf Lamed Beis. The Gemara establishes that with regard to the hadas and the arava, you need three tefachim. In contrast, with regard to the lulav, you need a fourth tefach. So the Rav Zichron Levracha, in his shiurim in Sukkah, quoted by Rabbi Reichman here in the Rishimos Shiurim, and this you can see on page Kuf Nun Gimel, the Rav wants to suggest that this fourth tefach of the lulav is a special halacha. It's not identical with the first three tefachim of a lulav, or corresponding in the case of hadas and arov. What is unique about the fourth tefach? So the Rav suggests the following. That the basic three tefachim defines what he calls the cheftza shel lulav, or the cheftza shel hadas. Meaning without the three tefachim, it's not a lulav, it's not a hadas. The fourth tefach of the lulav doesn't define the cheftza, but it's a special halacha in the lulav, because the lulav plays a primary, or the primary role in nanuim. And therefore the lulav has to tower above the other three tefachim in order to, shall we say, set the charge for nanuim. And the Rav goes ahead and proves this in a very beautiful way. Tosfos, based on a sugya Masechta Nida, the famous sugya of Shiurim is in Masechta Nida, Tosfos claims that according to the sugya Nida, the fourth tefach has a different system than the first three tefachim. You know, there are three classes of tefachim. The tefach is called, there's what's called the tefach Beinoni, which is the classical tefach, six tefachim ekanama. And then there's what's called tefach Katan, there's a tefach Gadol. And Tosfos proves from the Gemara Nida that although the first three tefachim that form the shear of a lulav are tefachim beinanim, the fourth tefach is either, again it depends on two different girsos in Rabbi Tarfon, but it's either a tefach gadol or a tefach katan. So the Rav says the fact that the fourth tefach of a lulav is different than the first three tefachim indicates that with regard to lulav, there's some special halacha which reflects itself in the fourth tefach that is required in order to achieve nanuim. So whereas with regard to the first three tefachim, whether it be in the lulav or in the case of hadassim and aravos, those three tefachim are necessary to define the cheft itself. The fourth tefach of a lulav is a unique halacha, we call it a din mesuyam, in order to achieve a possibility of doing nanu. And the Rav came up with an afkamim. It's a little bit wild, you have to have a good imagination for this. The Rav imagines a situation in front of his eyes in which, let's say, part of the lulav is blocked, and what you see above the blockage is one tefach. The fourth tefach is visible to the eye. Comes along an idol worshiper, and he worships the fourth tefach. And he makes it into an avodah zarah, whether it's asherah, whatever the case may be. It becomes what's called in the Gemara's language, kitusei mechta shiura. Which means, since it's only l'sreifa, and it has to be burnt, it cannot form a shir, says the Rav. You could be yotze with this lulav. Unbelievable chiddush. Why? Because the first three tefachim define the cheftah shel lulav. Now we have a fourth tefach requirement to lulav, but that's only to implement nanuim. Says the Rav, you could still implement nanuim even though it's only the sreifa. The halach of kitusei mechta shiura only applies when we're defining the guf halulav. But I wanted to add another thing. And this Rav Reichman has, if you turn the page to Kuf Nun Hey, he has the following. He asks the following question: why is it that the lulav is unique, and it has this kiyum of nanuim, which reflects itself in the requirement of the fourth tefach? He says something very beautiful. He says, "Halulav hu min haikri shevedalad aminu." Lulav is unique, and it's the primary min of all four. We think it's the esrog, and go ask the sellers; they'll charge you for it, right? The esrog, but halachically, a lamdan, if he studies the Rav's Torah, knows that the lulav is unique and it towers above the other meaning. Says the Rav, we make a bracha al netilas lulav. We don't make a bracha on dal meaning. But the Rav explains why. He quotes a Ravid. The Ravid, in his Hasagas on the Rambam, quotes a Yushalmi. There are many explanations to why a lulav hayavesh, a dried up lulav that turns white, is possible. First Mishnah in the third parak of Sukkah. And Yushalmi says that a lulav hayavish is chashuv kemes. It's like a dead body, it turns white. And the Torah says, and David Mel says, lo amesim yahalu ka, that the dead people are not capable of praising God. Says the Rav, according to the Ravid and his Yushalmi, the halach of lulav is that lulav by definition is the instrument, is the primary utensil for Yahalalu Atzei Ayar. It means this is going to be the tool for which we praise Hashem. Where do we find this? Where's the Yahalalu card? The Torah says, L'kachtem L'chem. The answer is Nanuim. Nanuim is the kiyum of Oz Yiranu Atzei Ayar. That's the Rina, that's the Shevach, the praise to Hashem. Therefore, says the Ravid, that if the lulav is Yavesh, it's Kemes, it doesn't have the capacity to be used to praise Hashem. That's the lulav. And the Rav goes as far as to say, which it boggles my mind, he says, Karavli Lomar, I'm tempted to say, when the Rav says that, you know he's going out on a limb, that l'fi Yushalmi, a hadas yovesh would be kosher. Why? Because as dry as the hadas is, it's still green. And if it's green, it's not white. And if it's not white, it's not choshev kemes. And all this, he says, reflects the unique status of a lulav, which is the tool for Yahaluka, and therefore lo amesim, once it's mess, it cannot be used. I just thought that was very, very beautiful. I was trying to rack my brains and come up with any other examples in Sukkah of Din Chloli and Din Mesuyam. And I came up with the following question. We have a principle in the second parak of Sukkah, Mitztayer Patumina Sukkah. Where do we find in any halacha in any mitzvah other than sukkah that mitztar is potter. For example, we have halachas of a chole, you know, chol sheish bo sakana, chol sheim bo sakana, maybe with regard to tainios and many different halachas, we can alleviate a chole of certain mitzvahs and obligations, but I never found that a mitztar, you know, it's raining and it's uncomfortable, and therefore I'm potter min asukkah. Where do we find the parallel in other mitzvahs? But I thought that maybe this is a din mesuyon. Teishvu ke'ein toduru. And if I'm a mitztar, it's not a yeshiva ke'ein dira. And therefore, even if I would go ahead and sit in the sukkah at that point and decide to suffer, you know, be a martyr, but nevertheless, I would not fulfill a mitzvah because it's not yeshiva. The Torah requires yeshiva, teishvu ke'ein toduru. Maybe that would be another example of a very unique halacha in Hilchos Sukkah. And now if you'll turn to Yemar Mekomos, I want to show you something in Rav Adler's book about Chatzi Shir. And this is a very, very fascinating discussion. We know, based on the Gemara in Yuma in the 8th Perek, Chatzi Shir, according to Rav Yochanan, is also in a Torah. And the question is, what's the nature, how do you define the essence of this Isur of Chatzi Shir? So if you take a look on page Tes Zayin, on the right side of the page towards the bottom, he quotes a Tosfos Yeshanim. And he says, Ikar Taima de Rabbi Yochanan, de Dorish Leila Kamon Mikra, de Kol Chelev. In other words, in the Parsh of Chelev, the Torah adds the word Kol. And Kol Chelev comes to include even a Chatzi Shir of Chelev. That's how Tosfos Yeshanim has it. The Ran, on the other hand, says that Ikar Taima de Rabbi Yochanan Misvarahi. It's based on Svara. And he quotes the Gemara of Chazi Litztarufe, which means if I take a kezias of the Vela Trefa and I cut it up into small pieces, each piece is Chazi Litztarufe. If you add another piece, till finally the shisel is full and it's a full kezias. So perhaps we can raise the following hakim. What is the nature of the Isur of Chatzi Shir? Is Chatzi Shir a din misuyam? In other words, every single Isur that the Torah prohibits engenders an Isur of Kashir, which is the full-blown Isur for which you had Malkus, but it also engenders the Isur that applies to every single component, every molecule that makes up that Isur. That also is Nevela. Meaning, one way of learning Chatzi Shir is to say that it's not that when I hit bingo, I hit Kezias, all of a sudden it becomes Nevela. You know, until now it wasn't Nevela. It is Nevela. It's Chelev, it's Dam, it's Trefa, whatever it might be. The other way of explaining is no. The Torah says that you're only in violation of the Isur if you ate a Shir. Less than a Shir is not a violation. Oh, but there's a different halacha. And that's a universal halacha, a general halacha called Chatzi Shir. And it could be that it all depends upon how you derive Chatzi Shir. If you derive it misvara, meaning you cut up the small pieces, it's chazi, it's tarufe, then it has the same Isur Misuyam of whatever Isur you're dealing with. So Chatzi Shir Nevela is called Nevela, a Chatzi Shir Bas Mechalev is Bas Mechalev. But if you derive it from Kol Chelev, then it could be that Kol Chelev is coming to tell you that Chelev as a paradigm, as an example of all Isurei Torah, that Chatzi Shir is also Midin Kol Chelev. But fascinating is a discussion about a Chole Sheyesh Bo Sakana. The Ran quotes a Ramban, and this you see on page Yud Zayin. Just one second. Where is it? Okay. Here it is. You'll see on the left side, left column on page Yud Zayin, the Ramban in Masechta Yuma analyzes the following. There's a halacha in Yuma of Achso Bulmus that in certain cases it's necessary to feed a person on Yom Kippur. Machilin oso hakal kal. In other words, rather than feed him a major violation, let's say a chiv kares, which might be a chelev or dam, we should feed him kal. Give him tevel or nevel. So the Ramban wants to know what happens based on the sugi of krisus of a case of an ubra, a woman who's about to give birth, we feed her pachos pachos mikashir. So what should we do? Does the halacha of kal kal tchila apply in pachos mikashir? And the Ramban vacillates on this point. If I'm giving a chatzi shir, does it make any difference whether I give chelev or nevela? And the Ramban initially thinks no, and then he gives two answers, and according to one answer, yes. It really depends upon this chakira. If you define chatzi shir as the specific din miyuchad of that particular iser, then it carries with it the chumrah of that shame iser. So a half a zayis of chelev is chavur in contrast to a half a zayis of nevela, which is an iser kal relative to chelev. But if on the other hand, the iser of chatzi shir is a general iser, it's anonymous, it doesn't have a face or a personality, then what difference does it make whether you give him a chatzi shir of a kal or a different chatzi shir of a chor? At the end of the day, it's the same identical iser called chatzi shir. And the other nafkamina is going to be if a person takes a shvua not to eat chatzi shir. Normally we have a principle of mushba v'omei me'ar sinai. You can't take a shvua on something that you already have a shvua on. Ein shvua chal al shvua. So in our Sinai, we all took a shvua on all the isurim, the vela, treifa, bas v'chalv, etc. What happens if a person would take a shvua not to eat a chatzi zayis of nevela? Do we apply the principle of ein shvua chal al shvua, meaning mushba v'yomim ar shvua, you already took a shvua not to eat nevela? Or do we say no? Mushba v'yomim ar sinai only applies to the shir shalem, but not to a chatzi shir. And again, it should depend on this chakira. If you're going to tell me that a chatzi shir is an extension of isa nevela, just that you're not chayav until you finally eat the full shir, but included in the isa nevela that we were mushba v'yomim ar sinai is chatzi shir, then the halacha would be that ain't shvua chal al shvua. Because again, keep in mind, Rabbi Yochanan holds that chatzi shir also min haTorah. But if you're going to say that chatzi shir doesn't fit into any particular isur, but rather it's a universal isur, then there's no din of mushba v'yomim ar sinai, because nowhere in the shvur that we took at our Sinai was there an oath, that a pledge in which we enjoined ourselves from eating chatzi shir. Chatzi shir is not there. It's not one of the 613. Now, if you'll fast forward here in your pages, I'd like you to turn for a moment to page Chaf Gimel. I think it's the last page I sent you. And there on Chaf Gimel, you'll see a fascinating discussion about Lifnei Iver. And many years ago I discussed this, but I think I have a new insight into what's going on here in Lifnei Iver. Because you won't believe this, but the Ritva in Masechet Avodah Zarah on Daf Vav suggests that the din of Yehareg Val Yavar that applies to Avodah Zarah would apply even to Chatzi Shir. In other words, for every aver in the Torah, the halacha is yavar v'al yeharek. But the exception is avodah zarah, and another two. So what happens in a case where somebody puts a gun to your head and offers you to spare your life if you'll violate a lifnei iver of avodah zarah? And the Ritva actually mentions in a very serious light, that there would be a din of Mesiris Nefesh Ehog Val Yavar with regard to Lifnei Iver. And the question is obvious. What is he talking about? Lifnei Iver is a lav in the Torah like any other lav. Why would it be Ehog Val Yavar? So here again we have to raise a hakiru. What's the nature of Lifnei Iver? Is Lifnei Iver an Isur Kloli? It's universal. It doesn't take on the identity of that specific Iser if you're tripping someone up in the... Or no, Lifnei Iver is built into every single Avera. Every Avera in and of itself, by virtue of its own unique shame, personality and identity, engenders a Lifnei Iver. So therefore, if I violate a Lifnei Iver on Avodah Zarah, that's considered a violation of Avodah Zarah. And the Ritva no doubt adopted this position that Lifnei Iver is a din mesuyam, it's not a din kloli, and therefore would come under the general halacha of Avodah Zarah of Yehari Gal Yav. And Rabosa, in order to sharpen our understanding of this tool that I think we can use over and over again, I would like to say the following, based on my research, and it's not here in the article, but I think it should be emphasized. There are certain klolim, certain rules that apply to mitzvos in general. I made myself a list. For example, the Gemara in the second parak of Kedusha says, mitzvah bo yoser mi b'shlucho. Don't send the shliach when you can do the mitzvah yourself. Or for example, mitzvos tzrichos kavana. You need intention l'shem mitzvah. Again, a principle that applies in all mitzvahs, according to that mandion. Whenever you see, or a Hedra mitzvah that we discussed, I think there's a very important tool over here that says that whenever you see a general rule that should be applied to all mitzvahs, ask yourself the following question, is it a din kloli or a din mesuya? In other words, when I do a mitzvah myself, rather than through a shliach, what does that do for me? Does that enhance that particular kiyum mitzvah? So I marry a woman, harayat mekudeshes li, by myself. Ki yikach ish isha, the Rambam counts it in Taryag is one of the mitzvahs. It's not some sort of general kiyum of avas Hashem, that I love God. You know, the Rambam at the end of Hilchos Me'ilah speaks about why you should bring the best carbon on the Mizbeach, like Hevel and not like Kayin, and the answer is because it's Avas Hashem, we want to show the love for mitzvahs in general. No, it could be that mitzvah Bo Yosef Mishlucho reflects that specific mitzvah and enhances that mitzvah. It's a kiyum in that mitzvah miyuchedes. Or for example, Chaviva Mitzvah B'Shaita. It's best to do a mitzvah in its proper time. The sugya in Rabbi Yishmael in Menachos wants to know the following. There's something called Hekter Chalavim Ve'Evarim, which can be done at night. So for example, you bring the carbon on the Mizbeach by day, but the Chalavim Ve'Evarim are burnt on the Mizbeach at night. So the sugya wants to know what happens on Shabbos. There's Halach of Ola Shabbos B'Shabbato, so I bring an Ola Shabbos and I can be Docha Shabbos. What about Hekter Chalavim? That's a Malacha Doraisa of Havara. Can I violate the Shabbos? So the Gemara says, Chaviva Mitzvah V'Shaita. What do you mean Chaviva Mitzvah V'Shaita? Because Chaviva Mitzvah V'Shaita, I'm going to violate the Shabbos? It makes no sense. But the answer is that Chaviva Mitzvah V'Shaita impacts on that particular mitzvah. It's not some sort of an independent kiyum. It's an expansion or enhancement of that particular kiyum. Within the mitzvah of Ola Shabbos B'Shabbato, there's halach of shaito, of doing it the best possible moment, the first opportune moment. Sure, I could delay Hekter Chalav Ve'Varim till after Shabbos. And I would be Mekayim, I would obtain the kiyum of Hekter Chalav Ve'Varim. But mitzvah, Chaviva Mitzvah Shaito means it's a different kind of kiyum of the Ola. And since it's an Ola Shabbos, and now I was Mekayim the Ola Shabbos together with its Hekter Chalav Ve'Varim, I can be Docha Shabbos. You know that in the midst of Kiddush, the halacha is that you're not allowed to eat before Kiddush. That's called the Isur Te'ima before Kiddush. Now, there's a general halacha that before you, when a chiyuv mitzvah comes around, you're not supposed to be eating until you implement the mitzvah.
I hope I didn't crack any jokes.
Okay. So my question is, the Isur to Ima the Fnei Kiddush, is that a universal halacha? Like, for example, the Gemara says at the beginning of Pesachim, before Bedikas Chametz, you shouldn't be eating. And before Kriyat Shema, you shouldn't be eating, and so forth and so on, all the dinim. Or is the Isur to Ima Lefnei Kiddush, Kodem Kiddush, a unique halacha in Hilchas Kiddush? Because insofar as Kiddush has to kick off the Suda Shabbos, and Kiddush El Makom Suda, if you've already eaten before Kiddush, you undermine the Kiyum of Kiddush. It's a Kiddush halacha. For example, it could be for you're allowed to do Te'ima before Kriyat Shema, before Bedikas Chametz. If you only eat a small amount, it's not in the Chilus Keva. But with regard to Te'ima Lufnei Kiddush, there's an Isur that applies even if it's not Achilas Keva. That would seem to indicate that it's a Din Mesuyam, it's a separate halacha. It doesn't belong to the universal halacha. Don't eat before a mitzvah. And finally, I want to leave you with food for thought as we end. There's halacha of Das. For example, in Kinyanim, there's Das Machna, there's Das Kone. A person has to have Gemiras Das to make a serious decision in order to enter into a contractual agreement or to transfer ownership. That halacha of Das applies in Gittin with regard to the Megaresh, not with regard to the Miskareshes. I'm not talking now about Cherem, about Cherem Dorbet Gersh, I'm talking about Neikra Din Doraisa, and therefore, she doesn't require Das, but he does. In contrast, Kiddushin requires Das Mekadesh and Das Miskadeshes. A woman cannot be Mekudeshes Bal Korcha against her will, she needs Das. The question is, whether Das in Kiddushin is identical to Das in Kol HaTorah Kula, in Kinyanim. Well, Kiddushin is also a Kinyan. Ha'isha nicknames B'shlosha Drachim, the opening Mishnah. So that, insofar as I compare Das in Kiddushin to Das in Kinyanim, because Kiddushin is also a Kinyan, then it's a Din Kloli. And all the rules that apply in general to Das should apply to Kiddushin as well, and there should be no difference. Or no. Perhaps the requirement of Das and Kiddushin, because Kiddushin is not just a Kinyan. Kiddushin engenders what we call a Kinyan Isur. She becomes Asura Kuliyama, the Torah says Shishish. The halach of Das is a separate requirement above and beyond the requirement of Das in Kol HaTorah Kula. And this might impact on other halachas as well. Like, for example, in Nedarim, you need Das, where the question is whether Nedarim requires Das of Kol HaTorah Kula or a separate Das. And as I said, this has to be analyzed in Kiddushin particularly, because you'll see that in the laws of Kiddushin, there are certain requirements that she has to clarify her Das. It's got to be rock solid before the Kiddushin can be Chal. It's a Din Mesuyam, it's a separate halacha. Okay, if there are any questions, now's a great time to ask. You can either turn on your mics or do a chat. And I want to take this opportunity to thank everyone tremendously for coming. I know that it's difficult to come to a shir, especially lunchtime. My feeling is that because of the matzav here in Eretz Yisrael, Klal Yisrael needs every single schus. The more Torah we can learn, that's what we can do back here in the Oref, as they call it. We're not up front facing, as the Chayalim are, the life or death situation of dealing with guerrilla warfare, Rachmana Litzlan. But we should try to add a little Torah learning, tefillah for sure, Tehillim. We embarked upon a project, I assume you have it also where you're coming from, where we take every person adopts a Chayal's name, because many of the Chayalim before they went into Aza gave us their names, and we are praying, you know, based on the Chazal in last week's parasha, Parashas Matas in Milchemes Midyan, Elif Lamata, that there was a corresponding person to be mispal for every single Jewish soldier that went out to battle against Midyan, and how much more so today with all that's going on. Do we need this? So once again, I want to thank everyone. Chacham Daniel, and of course Chaim, who's here, and I didn't expect Chaim to make it, Ira, who's here, because
he found time in his busy schedule, Ruby and Yair. It's very heartwarming to see all of you.
Was a soldier at ShmiraProject.com.
ShmiraProject.com?
ShmiraProject.com.
Okay, we're circulating it here in our little shul here called the Amic Learning Center, and you can get it online, and you just sign up to be mitpalel for one or the other of the chayalim. Okay, then, Rabosa, again, I think it's a very important tool. I want you to use it. You can use it in Chumash, you can use it in Tanakh, you can use it certainly in Shas, in Poskim, Halacha, wherever you go, plug in this, you know, Din Kloli or Din Mesuyim. Are we dealing with a unique Halacha or it's part of a general Halacha? There's a Briska Rav in Hilchos Nazirus, a very important one that's based on this Chakira, and there are many, many other sugyas that we didn't even touch on. But we did cover a wealth of information, a lot of sugyas. I hope you get a chance to review it. And once again, thank you so much. I'm going to end the meeting now. And I hope you can join me for other shiurim. There'll be a shiur on Chumash, on Parshas Masai tomorrow, Mirza Shem. There'll be a shiur on Lundis in the sugya of Shlichus, God willing, on Wednesday at this time. So I'd like to see you, whatever you can possibly do. Oh, not for my sake, but just to add the kiyum of Talmud Torah, the schus of Limud Torah, as much as we can, especially in these trying times. Thank you so much, and we should hear B'sorot Tovot. Shkach, thank you so much.